Hey there, this is Dan Delta Collins. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and also youtube.com/wanderingdms. And now, we hope you enjoy the show.
Hi everyone, welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan, and today on Wandering DMs, we're going to be talking about running D&D with no materials on hand, because maybe you've lost the rules, or the dice, or the characters, or someone just asked you to show them what role-playing is with no warning. We'll talk about how to grab players into a cool adventure from nothing. All that and more today on Wandering DMs.
Before we get into the conversation, as always, I will remind everyone that at the end of the show, we will be hosting our after-party chat. That is a live video chat that Dan and I host on our Patreon Discord server. And you can join in by becoming a patron. Just visit patreon.com/wanderingdms, pledge at any tier, and you'll get an invite to our Discord server. And after maybe 10 minutes after the show, we will hop on there and host a live video chat with all our patrons. And we'd love for you to join us.
We just have the best viewers and patrons here at the Wandering DMs channel. So we love touching base with them every Sunday. And big thanks to one of our patrons, Bacrius, for checking in that we are properly live this Sunday on both YouTube and Twitch and other spots. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Always appreciate the technical check.
we need that. We need that. So, Paul, you were wandering this weekend to, I believe, TotalCon in Massachusetts. And hopefully you had some good games there. But you had a very interesting experience that I personally wasn't sure how I would handle it. What happened this weekend?
Yeah, this I was at TotalCon actually just until just minutes ago, just returned home from it, hot off of it. And it's a great convention. It's here in Marlborough, Mass, and it's very big. It's 4-day convention from Thursday through Sunday. And anyway, I've been going for years and years. And today's show is inspired by events from yesterday. So I was at the convention, and we have a good friend there who loves to run Fiasco at these conventions. And she doesn't use the new board game card version, right? She uses the old book. And so that involves a lot of D6s, and she usually spreads paper over the entire table and gives everyone markers, and they write directly on the table as they're playing. It's real fun. It's a great game. And unfortunately, so she was there with her partner, who had to leave a day early and left with all of her Fiasco material in his car.
Oh no!
And just took off.
Oh no!
And so I get a text from her. A whole bunch of us, you know, she just texts everybody she knows at the con and just says, "Oh my god, I have nothing." Right? All of my material, everything I need to run my game today is gone. Please help. So, I mean, the good news is, you know, Fiasco is largely an improvised game, so you don't need a lot. I happen to have in my dice bag, you need a very large number of D6s of two colors, right, for this game. And I happen to have that on me. So I scooped up the dice and I ran to her hotel room and I said, "Here's dice." As I was going there, another friend is showing up and he happens to have a whole bunch of magic markers on him. And most amazingly, another friend says, "Well, I have a big roll of butcher block paper." Right? And it's like, amazing. Why would you have that? I don't know, but it's perfect, right? You can lay that out on the table, it's drawn. And I think then she managed to get the materials she needed as a PDF onto a laptop, and the convention staff helped her out by using their printers to print out some of her material. So, you know, last minute scramble, amazingly, by the time it was time to run her game, had all the things she needed on hand. But it kind of got me thinking about, like, well, how do you run? Like, what is the minimal amount of stuff you need to run a game? How would you run a game if you, for example, you know, you all your materials, as you can see in the thumbnail of this show, right? All your materials are in a backpack that got left behind somewhere. Right? Can you still play? Right? Oh, we're here. Can we still play? And I don't know, it's happened to me, I'm sure, in cases where, like, I'm in some weird situation, something happens, the power goes out, or we're, you know, somewhere with friends and just, like, we got nothing to do in a bunch of hours, and, like, I guess we could play a game, right? Like, how do you put it together last minute with nothing on hand?
That seems like a legitimate dilemma, and I will say at the outset that you know some people have written a couple of articles about low prep DMing and things like that, and I personally am inherently a very high prep DM, so I normally have all kinds of background and things that I know aren't actually going to get used. And I have to be willing to discard it when the play starts. Frankly, that has to be part of the game. So I'm ready, and it gets me to the table. And you know, just as one example of that, the current Star Frontiers campaign that I've been running, that is allegedly pre-written adventure modules that I picked so that I didn't have to do a lot of prep. I currently have a campaign binder that's this large of stuff, that's mostly stuff that I've written and added to the campaign. And I got to admit, if this binder disappeared for one of my sessions, I would have, that would be a tough think for me. That would be a pretty tough thing for me. And that actually did happen a couple years ago, as I was teaching at school one day, was going to go to a game session afterwards, and my office mate shuffled my game binder like that under a big stack of his papers, and it disappeared into a giant mound of math professor papers. I did actually wind up at a session without that binder, and for one session be like, well, I don't know what I can't even remember what I did now. Help me out here. What did I do? What a disaster. I can't remember what I did now.
That's hilarious. But you did play. A game happened.
I might have blacked out. Not sure. Maybe Night Dan might have taken over because something happened. And I at the moment I can't remember what happened.
Yeah. I think there's an interesting difference here of like and I know we're going to walk down a ton of different hypotheticals here, I'm sure, of different, you know, use cases of why this would even come up. But like, you know, if you're, there's a big difference, I think, between like, you were expecting to run a specific thing, right? I had prepped all this material, and now the material is lost or not accessible, versus we're on the off the cuff, like, oh, we're sitting around the house with a bunch of friends and all the power goes out. We were going to watch a movie or something or do something, and that's no longer available. Can we play a game? Right. And then you're just, now you're having to invent from whole cloth.
Yeah.
Off the cuff again. How do you do that? And then I of course my brain wants to come up with contrived situations where like, okay, you're not at home. You're like, we're on a train, right? We're traveling. And you go, I don't know, I'm bored. We got a couple of hours. Can we play a game? Yeah.
I feel like that's happened to you. That's actually happened to you, right? That's happened to.
It's something I've talked about in the past because the one time I went to PAX Unplugged, I took the train, and it's a long several hour ride, and I quickly realized that half the train was full of people going to PAX Unplugged, and the thought just struck me like, we should absolutely play something. Like, we could just go in the dining car. There's a table, right? I have gaming materials in my backpack. Why am I not gaming right now? And I think I like hit Twitter or something and, you know, tried to like, you know, just post like, hey, if anyone's on this train and wants to play a game, let's do it. But it never came together.
Okay.
But I think that would be fun. I think that would actually be super fun to just, you know, we're on a train going somewhere. Like, let's play a role-playing game. That would be fun. Anyway,
nice.
Yeah.
I think I was in a meeting. I was in a meeting at my job once, and I think it was a security issue. And they're like, we're going to check all of this or everybody that comes in. And I asked the question, how much time is that going to take? And they said zero. And I believe I said back to them, I think you underestimate what a small number zero is. So maybe we should talk about Like, how close to zero, how close to absolute nothing are you getting? Because, you know, some things I could think about will be solved by having internet access. Like, you're talking about, do you have a phone? Do you have electricity? Do you have internet access?
Internet really, you know, in this day and age, internet access really is a game changer, right? Oftentimes, you know, I might have. And actually, this happened to me just this past week. And now that I'm saying this out loud, I absolutely, one of the adventures I was running, I forgot the book that the adventure is written in. Like, I left it here in my bookshelf. I had all the other materials, the character sheets, the you know, everything I needed to run the game. But I had forgotten the actual scenario. And I was like, well, that's no big deal. I've got it as a PDF available, you know, on the cloud. And I just popped it open on my phone. No big deal. And there you go. I had the text on in front of me. So I think that's fairly common. The other thing is, like, we'll talk, I think, a bit about, like, randomizers. Oh, no, I forgot my dice, right? Like, one of my favorite ridiculous things that's appeared is, like, if I just Google 2D8, it just happens.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, that's nice. Like,
that's amazing. Yeah. Right? So,
The Google dice pool is really neat.
It's surprisingly good. And I just love that I could just Google a combination, you know, in dice notation, and boom, it just animates and shows them to me. It's wonderful.
That's super nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's a big difference.
Because
I got to say, I think at some point in the 80s, I think I was running a game for my cousins, I think, in the back of a cattle truck at a fair. And I think my one and only D20 fell off my lap clipboard into the hay.
No.
And I think I lost my D20 in the hay. And I'm like, what do I do now?
not quite finding a needle in a haystack, but as hard as finding a D20 in a haystack.
Yeah, and they were the same color. You know, they were color too, right? That was my one.
Oh, jeez. Oh, jeez.
Boy, you kids, you don't know how, kids these days do not know how easy they have it. Google D20, you're all set.
But I will say, this has come up for me in cases where, like, I'm at home and, you know, say there's a big storm and the power goes out, right? Okay, you have no internet. Or you're traveling, right? We can talk about that, right? I don't know, these days, Wi-Fi is everywhere. But it could happen, right? It could happen that you have no internet. So let's cross that one off and say, great. No internet, Dan. You've got to improvise. I think that the next big line in the sand for me is, like, do you at least have, like, pen and paper, pencil and paper? I think being able to write things down and have pieces of paper is that's crucial, right? So I remember as a kid, and this is, I'm sure, you know, we've talked about this a billion times, but I remember as a kid not having dice in some situation and just taking a piece of paper and tearing it up into little pieces and writing numbers on the pieces and chucking them in a cup, shake them up, right? And there you go. There's your random number generator. You've got it.
Well, that's how I started. Grabbing my Holmes replica book. So is that, they don't have it in the back here. But I feel that that's how I started. So you can definitely do that. Make your own chits.
You can definitely solve the random number generation in a variety of ways. Like you were talking about being in the back of a truck in a bunch of hay, and my brain immediately went to, like, okay, well, you could play the, like, draw straws, right? You can take literal straws of hay and rip them off at their various sizes, and there's your randomizer. Just draw one. Right.
You know, you can, it's a good point that you can think about starting to just collapse the mechanics. Okay. So hypothetically, you know, maybe I'm running a game based on percentages, or you're running D&D with D20 and you lose that, maybe you lose that special die. So then you can just start collapsing. You can just say, okay, I'm going to have to start modifying the mechanics and just start collapsing it. So maybe you've got one of your many D6s, right? You could just say, I'm gonna roll a D6 and multiply by 3. Okay, gets you in the ballpark. You know, gets in the ballpark of a D20, or vice versa. You can just start saying 1 to 2 is terrible, 3 to 4 is okay, and 5 to 6 is fantastic, and just start having the game look like that. A couple minutes ago, William in the chat was saying just start doing. So it's showing up a little bit weird there on screen. Sorry, but start using rock, paper, scissors.
That's not what I was expecting.
It's a randomizer. Yeah, that was a little different. Maybe I'm going to avoid clicking that button in the future.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay. Another something that's maybe a little broken in the tech. Cool.
So anyway, we're gonna improvise about what to do about putting the text on screen today.
I got to figure out how to get that text off of you.
Oh, no.
How do I make that go away? Oh, dear.
Okay, so changed my name tag, right? I think it got put into my name tag.
That is,
instead of
that
the normal.
There you go.
Thank you, sir.
Was not expecting that one. Okay. Rolling with it. Sorry. The people listening to the audio only podcast are going, what are they going on about? What is happening? Sorry. A little technical trouble there, folks, but proceed. So randomizers, dice. I mean, as you're talking about like modifying the game rules, right? Because maybe you don't even have the game books, right? And if you don't have the books, that, you know, we can't look it up, right? You're just going to have to start making up the rules on the fly. And so my brain is immediately going to, like, what's the rule set you're playing with, right? Probably real hard to run 5th edition D&D without any texts around.
There you go.
Right? Yep. Oh, D&D? Right. Yeah, I think I could pull that off. But also, like, okay, if I only have a 2d6 on hand, maybe even D&D isn't what I want to be running. Maybe I want to run some d6-based system or some other game. I think I had in my bag, right? I always, when I go to cons, I always have a couple of extra things in my bag, like just in case I, you know, find myself at a table with a bunch of people and no idea what to do. One of the things I usually have on me is Cheat Your Own Adventure. Cheat Your Own Adventure uses, I think, it may be a single D6 or 2D6, and it the entire rules of it fit on a single page of paper. And that's literally all you need. You don't need to write anything. Right, I think you do need to like keep a counter. So maybe you need to circle a number or write down a single number somewhere, or maybe you have an extra D6 that you can use or something to count. I'm sure you could with objects around you, you can improvise a way to keep tabs of a number that ranges from 1 to 12, I think, and move it up and down.
Right. Yeah. Right. That should be coin, you have coins or sticks or something like that. And I'll say, look, on the one hand, I'll say, you know, even if your internet access is out, I personally do keep local backups of a number of kind of key rule sets. So I have PDF copies of stuff on my phone or my tablet. You know, I have the original D&D books on my phone as PDFs, so I can pull that up if I need to on the fly. So it's a good idea. I'm not someone that entirely trusts the cloud myself, so I keep local copies of stuff available for me as one possible backup. And I'll say, you know, collapsing, I mean, you know, you don't have the rule books, you know, as DM, you should have memorized them, right? I mean, we all agree with that. You should have full recall of your rule set.
I mean, here's a suggestion, right? If you're running classic D&D of one flavor or another, and you have no, for whatever reason, you're in a situation, you have no materials, I would say run a first level thing, right? Like, it's going to be much easier to run, you know, you gotta memorize, your magic user has to memorize one spell, right? Whereas if you're trying to run like a 9th level adventure, maybe that's a little harder because you got to remember all these different spells and how they work, or maybe there's a lot of magic items that folks have and whatnot. But if we really have zero materials, I think it's going to be much easier to run a first level game.
You're right. Very good point. Can I make a little aside about using chits to play D&D? Because I've spawned and this is great. So I spawned, there's a conversation in the chat right now, and I would be part of it. For those of us that started with Holmes D&D basics at a particular era, the box did not come with dice. And I was looking in here a minute ago, you had a page of chits that pre-made in plastic, you'd cut out and put them in a cup. And that's totally how I played D&D for the first year of my life. And I saw a very interesting article written by Jim Ward just yesterday, actually, on this point about how that came to pass. And it was, according to Jim, it wasn't in, because he was in charge of actually packing the stuff at the time at TSR. It wasn't entirely because of a shortman of dice. It was that at the time TSR was trying to switch from ordering dice from, I believe, a Hong Kong supplier that Jim had to order like 9 months in advance to make sure it was available at the right time. And they TSR wanted to make their own dice. And the thing was, they were developing the dice molds, and some vice president, it might have been one of the Blooms, came in and said, "Jim, stop ordering the dice. We're going to take care of it. We're gonna make our own dice. You don't need to order it." And Jim said, "Do you have the dice molds? Are they actually complete?" And he's like, "You don't worry about it. They're going to be complete at the right time. No sweat. It's not your job. Don't you worry about it." And Jim kept, this feels very much like kind of some software things, doesn't it, Paul?
Yeah, so, this was,
monitoring
a lot of regular work.
Right. And and supposedly Bloom would catch Jim monitoring on it and got increasingly aggravated and would push increasing amounts of abuse on Jim Ward for caring about it and telling other people, you know, we're past the point. We can't order the, it's too late to order the dice for the next box set shipment. And ultimately, they missed. Finally, they got Gygax involved, and Gygax checked the production run, and it was all unusable garbage. And Gygax turned to Jim and said, "If anybody tells you to stop ordering dice from Hong Kong, ignore them. Keep ordering the damn dice." And that's the window where they couldn't provide dice in the box set, apparently. Isn't that crazy? It's a great article. You should look it up on, up online.
That's fantastic. That is very interesting.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, these days, everybody that I know who games has just like mountains of dice, piles of dice everywhere. But I definitely remember a time when, you know, I had a set of dice and maybe I forgot them. Right. And then it just, I don't know. I definitely remember doing that very like super homemade, just tearing notebook paper up and writing numbers on it and sticking it in a cup or a hat of like, okay, well, I guess this will generate random numbers for me. And I know lots of people have other interesting, unusual, right? Like you flip through a book and just stop and, you know, pick a random page and look at the page number, right? There's a lot of ways to generate random numbers. Yeah. In life.
Write a grid on a piece of paper and throw a coin on it or something.
Yeah. So, Okay. I want to turn. There was a nice comment in the chat I saw go by here. Let's see if I can find it. I'm just gonna read it because we don't want to mess up our video again. Right. Somebody asked to take the conversation in a different direction. Let's say by materials you mean you don't have your game notes, right? Yeah. Okay. Yes, and paper and physical materials aside, what if you completely have to improvise the game on the spot? What then?
Now, okay, so for me, I will say that I haven't gotten it down to zero, but I've gotten it down pretty small. And there was a time, it's actually just about a year ago, and I actually haven't said this in public until just now, but there's currently an off-Broadway show here in New York called 20-Sided Tavern, which is improvisational onstage D&D. And about a year ago, I was auditioning for that, and I got fairly deep into the audition cycle, actually, but obviously didn't actually get it. So as part of my practice for that, I made up an improv adventure exercise for myself that that's here. It's like half of a page. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so this was me, and I drilled myself on this a couple times, entirely making up a D&D adventure on the fly for any character at any level. And so what I would do is, and I can do this with a little practice, I can do it in about 40 minutes is what I got down to, beginning to end. And so I had a couple ideas here. I would ask the player, what kind of character do you want? Just a couple details about their character and even any level, which is kind of an interesting point. So it actually, do you want to play low level, medium level, high level? And I can run with any of those things. And so I did have a couple of Dice and Logos maps. So assuming you have internet access, you can go to the Dice and Logos site, and we use him for a lot of stuff. Grab something there. And with a little exercise, and I did have my DM screen that has the standard D&D random monster chart. And so with no stats, except the stuff that basically I would think up in my mind about whether things are difficult or easy. Is this high armor or low? I wouldn't track hit points. I would just track number of hits and kind of collapse that. I did a decent job of injecting, and to my thought process is, okay, so I kind of want three beats here. I want a combat encounter, I want a negotiation encounter, and I want kind of some kind of trap trick thing. And I did, with a little bit of practice, I did a decent job of improvising all of those beats and having pretty satisfying conclusions to it. So for me, I can get it down to a page. I can get it down to that one page, and I can improvise a dungeon is what I found.
I was honestly wondering, like, yes, you could, if you have downloaded or printed maps in front of you, that's one thing. If you have, maybe you just have a piece of paper and you take some time to quickly sketch a dungeon, a very simple one, right? And you can just draw it out real quick. But I feel like I kind of want to push on this a little bit and say, like, is a dungeon crawl the best idea? Maybe you want an overland outdoor encounter, right? And my brain immediately goes to, like, how, Dan, you in the past you have run outdoor survival board, right? Outdoor spoliation. Right? So in this case, this is a game, right, where we're playing D&D, we have D&D characters, and we have just the outdoor survival board in front of us, which is just a hex map, and it's got locations of castles and dungeons. But I feel like when we've played this, it felt to me, at least, Dan, that there was a fair amount of improvisation going on your part. Maybe I'm wrong, but of, like, you land on this hex and maybe you just, what's here? I don't know. Here's this monster, right? And you know, if there's a layer of monsters, you maybe quickly improvise a three room cave system, which is, you know, at three rooms, you can improvise without even really having to draw a map, right?
You're right. I will say that you're right about that. And the first time that I went to run that, you know, based sort of what's in the original D&D book, as far as running wilderness adventures on the outdoor survival map, I have never been so uncomfortable in my life. I was like, I almost had a panic attack of, I left for that. And I'm like, I have no idea how this is going to run. This is unlike anything I've ever run. And I haven't got any clue. This could be the biggest disaster I've ever run. I have no vision of what the action is going to look like, frankly. So maybe I wouldn't recommend that for your first attempt at an improvisational adventure. And I would say, I would in fact suggest a dungeon adventure, because the DM, you can restrict the options to something that you're comfortable with. For an outdoor adventure, I mean, there's no way except to say you can just go anywhere. But if you're doing this for the very first time, you can at least get started. You walk down the first hallway to a dungeon, you can go left or right. And I feel like anybody, and left, there's a bright light and there's some sound in that direction. And to the right, it's totally dark and there's a terribly foul smell in that direction. And that at least gets you started with... And you can provide whatever number of options is manageable to you. I think that's a good structure.
That's interesting. But I think you still need a map, right? You still need, or are you saying you're making this up on the fly, right?
I'm not going to tell you while I'm playing. I'll reveal that later on, Paul.
Yeah. Some folks have talked about having things like, you could have geomorphs. I think the first Kickstarter I ever backed was for a set of geomorph dice, right? So you just roll those dice, group them up, and boom, you have a little map. I think if I was doing a dungeon off the cuff, I would want a map. I don't think I want to, and it could be a very sketchy map, right? I could just use a regular piece of lined paper and just quickly draw a few squares and connecting corridors and such. But I feel like it would be hard for me to remain consistent if I was just kind of making it up as I went and keeping it in my head.
I totally feel that.
But I would probably want that for an outdoor game as well. Right? I think I'd still start with a piece of paper and I would draw like, okay, here's a forest, here's a castle, here's a cave. Boom, boom, boom. Okay, here you go. Now you can wander around here.
So yeah. Here's a trick that I came up with, and I'll, if I hadn't revealed it before, Paul, this is actually what I was doing when playing outdoor survival and you run into a cave, is you just have one single D6, okay? So I'm actually generating the dungeon on the fly with a single D6. So you start out, roll a D6, and I think if you get a 2 or a 3, and I'm looking at a D6 with pips on it, to be clear, so it's kind of suggestive about what's happening with the topography. If you roll a 2 or a 3, that's a shorter or a longer straight passage. If you roll a 1, that's a dead end. If you roll a 4, it's a medium-sized cave. If you roll a 5, it's a four-way intersection. And if you roll a 6, it's a giant cavern.
Gotcha.
That's actually what I was doing.
By the pips of like what the shape is, right? You're just looking at lines or squares. Yeah. That's fascinating. Exactly. That is fascinating. I like that a lot, honestly. I like that a lot. Out of curiosity though, as you're doing this and rolling the die, are you drawing? Are you drawing a map behind the screen of like, okay?
Probably, I think yes.
Yeah. See, I feel like you still want to do that. And this is where I'm getting the like how close to zero question, right? Because like, what if I don't have paper and a thing to write with? Mm-hmm. Can we still play a game, Dan, if we have no writing implements?
The answer is ultimately yes.
Yeah, yeah.
The answer is ultimately yes. The game's going to evolve, right? The game's going to you're going to shrink the rules a little bit, but ultimately it's going to turn into. You know, an improv exercise at some point.
It's fascinating. Like now, and I'm picturing now your D6 method of, and I'm imagining, okay, what if I don't have paper and a writing implement, but I do have just a very large number of D6s? I could just start rolling them and just put them on the table in front of me as a sort of virtual, you know, physical map that I'm creating as I go. That's fascinating. That is so cool.
Right. Absolutely.
I like that a lot.
Thank you.
I think once you get to the point of like, okay, we don't have dice and we don't have paper and then we're just sitting here, you know, all we have is our imaginations and our ability to speak to each other, right? At that point, I start to wonder like, I don't know, I feel like D&D is a stretch and maybe there are other games that would be better to play here.
Okay.
My brain starts to go into areas, games that are more improvisational, maybe GM-less, that are expecting kind of just a free-flowing storytelling experience. The one that's coming to mind, just because I was literally just reading the book yesterday as just light reading while I was relaxing in my hotel room during the con, so I was reading Wander Home. I've never actually played Wander Home. I think it came out in like 21. It's a very cozy game. Do you know Wander Home, Dan? Okay.
I'm not familiar with any game that's cozy, Paul.
Wander Home. Wander Home is it's a storytelling game where you play anthropomorphic animals in this very cozy environment. It's meant to be this kind of setting where you have an expectation that everyone you meet is generally going to be kind and honest for the most part, right? This just does not compute for Dan. It doesn't compute. The setting aside, because I'm going to break Dan's brain with this game, but setting aside, I want to say it's a very sweet storytelling game where you're talking about a group of characters going on a journey, encountering folks, and like one of the things it says in the rules is I have to keep going here just to watch Dan's reaction. One of the things it says in the rules is you will encounter people who have problems, but you're not going to solve their problems, but you might help them cope with them for a little bit.
No way, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's a fascinating game, and I would love to play it at some point. I want to sit down and play it. But the interesting thing is, it's one of those storytelling games, right, where the expectation is there's a DM version and a DM-less version, and a lot of the times I see people playing it in that DM-less state, right? So in those kind of games, often you end up kind of having a lot of separation between player and character because you're taking a lot of steps back and saying, you know, okay, we're gonna pitch ideas to each other. We're gonna talk about the story. I'm gonna take, oh, can you play this NPC? Right? I think you get honestly the same kind of feeling maybe from a game like Fiasco, right? Where you do have a character and you're often embodying that character, but you're often then also kind of taking a step back and having conversations with the people around the table that have a more writer's room kind of vibe to it. So the interesting thing about Wanderhome is there's no dice. You do need tokens, right? You do need tokens so you can like count, you know, how many tokens you have, because it's a resource for you. In the course of the game, you gain tokens by doing certain actions, and you have to spend tokens to do other certain kinds of actions. But then basically that's it. I think like if you had the book, if you had the physical book with you, I think it might still be, you could probably keep it all in your head. It might be a little challenging for some of the things, like when you're making your character, you have to make choices, and not being able to write those down would be a pain in the butt. But you could deal with it. You could probably, you know, just try real hard to memorize. I think you could play that game pretty easily with just the book and a group of people. It's easier.
That sounds reasonable.
Yeah, it's a fascinating game. And I feel like there's other games, like I was mentioning earlier, Cheat Your Own Adventure, right? Cheat Your Own Adventure is a highly improvised game, right? Nobody knows the story ahead of time. There is no content ahead of time. You are making it up as you go.
Interesting. What an interesting game. There's a comment from Vino Azul here a minute ago. It said, Wanderhome, until it takes that turn toward Watership Down, becomes horror. And I feel like that would be almost inevitable. I actually, you know, my improv gaming exercise that's right next to me, and I haven't looked at this in months, but one of the bullet points of my goals is try to ramp up humor and horror. And just for, I mean, I wrote that, but I was like, that's a slightly jarring ampersand there. Probably what's going to happen for me.
Yeah, I could see it.
Yeah, fascinating.
The more we talk about this, the more I feel like a writing implement is like, that is the, if I can only have one piece of equipment with me to play a role-playing game, I would really like some paper and something to write on that paper with.
I agree.
It's hard for me to imagine a game without that at hand. Yeah.
I agree. Yep. For my improv gaming, I had one piece of paper that was logging what was happening. You can.
And it's hard for me to imagine a situation. If you don't have that. Yeah, it's hard for me to imagine a situation where I don't have that. Frankly, like if I'm traveling, I probably have a backpack on me, which certainly has some blank paper and a pencil in it. Like that is just a thing that I have on me all the time.
You know, I can imagine situations where you're standing up, like if you're doing this while you're waiting in line, or you are, I don't know, on stage or something like that, and it becomes physically difficult to use a piece of paper while you're standing up.
That is an interesting point.
I can imagine something like that.
That show you were talking about that you auditioned for, having not, I don't know if you've, like, what was the setup? Were people at, were there like tables and chairs and people had writing material, or are you standing up and like in more of an actorly presentation?
Yeah. The discovery was, and I was part of a group of, we were thrown together randomly, but I was part of a group of five people that were auditioning all at once. And the discovery there was like, we want three things. We want you to be, you know, good on stage. We want you to be good improvisers. We don't care about the D&D rules, because we can teach anybody that. And so when they said that, I was like, "Oops! I misprepared. I mispitched this." At least what they were looking for was, and that show, for what it's worth, 20 Sided Tavern does have some scripted elements. So you had to show that you could do that. And then there's also improvisational elements. And for what it's worth, that audition was entirely just an improv audition. And let's just do standard. If anybody has taken an improv class, we're going to do some standard improv games with five people. That's what they care about. So no, there was no materials, no sitting down. You're on stage trying to use up space, no randomizers, and purely just, you know, can you hold attention on stage is all they were looking for. So, and I think all of us, like all five of us that I was with came in and we were carrying, like we were carrying dice or something like that. And we all had to adjust kind of quickly to that situation. So yeah. And I was, you know, I was pulling out,
was that?
You know, so for what it's worth in that situation, I was usually coming out first with an idea for a scene. And of course I was pulling stuff from D&D, you know, rules that I knew about. So I was setting up magic statue, or I'm using a gaseous form potion or something like that, you know, from my background knowledge, but we didn't have any rules or dice or anything like that.
Was that just part of the audition process, though? I wonder how they run the actual show, right? When they do the actual show, is there no writing materials? Is it just like improv with a veneer of D&D? Is that what's going on?
That's a pretty good description. I believe that's a pretty good description. Yeah. Yeah. If you look, there's a couple of clips on YouTube of them, and they've done this in Chicago, and they're doing it in New York now the last year or two. And I think there's one kind of special moment where they have like a 5 foot tall D20 and they have one audience member come up like, you're going to get the roll of D20 now. And that might be, to my knowledge, that might be the only time that they do that. So yeah, it's improv with a veneer of D&D is a great way of putting it.
That is interesting. It's interesting to remove the randomization, right? I think that's interesting. Like if we talk about, like we're just looking back and talking about a game like Wanderhome, the interesting thing about Wanderhome, right, is that there is no randomization, right? We're always making intentional choices. There's a resource that's getting pushed back and forth. So maybe you just don't have enough of that resource to do the thing you want to do, right? Maybe you need to go do something else to gain more of that resource. So that's a step in the direction of what I think I've heard you say before, is that the dice add to standard improvisation. No, right? That like improvisation is yes and, but dice incorporate no, right? You failed. It didn't happen. What you wanted did not happen, right?
And now how do you deal with that?
And then how you deal
with that, right? I agree.
Right? It is a chaos
that's
element,
my take I on think, it.
That is, yeah. Which, yeah, it's weird to me. It's not weird. It's just, it's a different experience, I think. It will feel less to me like an RPG when we don't have a randomizer in there to do that.
I agree with that. I very much agree with that. So I would, you know, using William's idea, be very, you know, gritty about find some way to throw a random element in there. So if it is chits or a phone app or just, you know, if the game does collapse down to rock, paper, scissors, I would want to grab
scissors,
one of
flip a coin, something.
If you've got a bunch of people, right? If you're in a situation where you have, I don't know, onlookers, pitch it to them. Maybe just put it up to a vote. Do you want this to happen or not?
Interesting.
You could, kind of like using the audience at an improv show to inject the random elements. You could do that. But so yeah, I agree. I would definitely want some kind of flip a coin. Yeah. If it gets down to flip a coin, do that. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely, you know, there's lots of ways I think to add that. I hadn't really thought of the idea of that. The audience is the randomization in an improv, in standard improvisational, theater. That's fascinating. Or I guess so. Yeah. I guess they are the random chaos.
You could I'm just on the coin thing, I'm thinking, you know, you could flip a coin with advantage or disadvantage. So you could make like, this is really hard, so you got to get two flips in a row, or this is really easy, you can get one of two flips. But yeah, this week I'm thinking about using the audience as the randomizer. Yes. Or I suppose you could pick any random person. Like you could just pick any player that's not in the current situation. Just ask them, do you feel that this is going to happen or not?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I mean, you know, if you're playing with a group of like, you know, four or five people, you know, you just ask someone who's not involved in the situation. You, other player. Does it happen or not?
And you know what? Okay, now I kind of want to play that because it's either going to be I feel like that's going to turn into either a very virtuous community or very quickly into a very degenerate community whereby I'm helping you and you're helping me and we like each other. And as soon as one person backstabs another, there's probably going to be like a revenge cycle go on. And now I kind of want to, see how that would work out.
That's delightful.
Now, Paul, we've seen a couple of examples of relatively well-known personalities introducing people to D&D for the first time without any materials in front of them. Do we want to just tell our viewers to look for that, or do we want to check them out here today?
I'm happy to look at some things together.
Okay.
I can put some stuff up if you want.
And we have some points about what D&D is like and how simple it can be. So one of them there was an interview with Gary Gygax, appeared on the Tomorrow Show that NBC had. It was their show that was running at midnight, actually, with Tom Snyder back in 1979, which I think is the year that I got started in D&D, actually. So Gary is there trying to explain what this unique game form is for the very first time. And then after a couple minutes, he presents a situation to Tom Snyder. And then we can play like about 2 minutes of what happens when.
Yeah, I got a little bit of audio here. I'm going to play it and we can talk over it if necessary. Hopefully folks can hear this properly. Here it is. Maybe not. I'm not hearing it. Are you hearing it?
Oh no.
Let me try that again.
I'm not.
Let me try that again.
We heard it in the pre-show. We were able to hear it.
Here it is. Maybe. Oh gosh. Give me a second here, Dan, real quick. Try that.
So if you're the dungeon master and I'm a dungeon user, and I've got a sleep spell, I've got a fireball spell, and I have a teleportation spell.
Right.
This is Tom.
That's true, without getting up and leaving.
All right. You'll say goodbye.
Sayonara.
Okay. Now I'll pick it up as if you were actually in a dungeon, and I'll...
Can you turn that up?
Because I have to be your eyes and everything. You're going to tell me what kind of information you need. So we'll assume that you are in a four-way passageway underground, and you can choose any direction you want to go. 10-foot-wide stone corridors deep beneath the earth. Now, you have a choice of any of the four directions. You tell me where you want to go.
Okay, let's go to the left.
Okay, you go to the left, and we'll assume you're going north, so you're going to head off to the west.
Okay.
Okay, you go west, and I tell you how many feet. You've gone 100 feet west, and suddenly there's a huge bronze door before you with a big door knocker on it, a big ring that obviously opens the door and serves as a knocker also. Do you want to turn around and go back the other way? Open the door? Knock first? What would you like to do?
I think I'll knock first.
Okay. Now, without having all of this written down, of course, there could be perhaps the knocker will trigger a stone block that drops on your head. That's the only way to do it. Politely enter, because it might be something that's not hostile. It might be very benign and friendly. Or it could be a warning system so that whatever's behind the door is waiting to greet you with drawn arms. This is the surface adventure is fun. It can encompass whatever imagination you really want to deal with. You can put any creativity you want into the game.
I still want to knock on the door.
Okay. So I love
that. The quality of the audio there is not fantastic. It is a recording from 1979. Yeah. But there you have Gary trying to like kind of improvise a little bit of role play. And then I love that the interviewer just gets drawn in and is like, no, keep playing. I want to keep going. Let's go. Let's go.
I think that interesting? That of course, and Gary there is trying to give kind of a broader picture to it, but that's all it takes, right? Just that decision. And you notice, you know, Gary can kind of intuit the rule of three. They get to the door. He gave him three options. You can turn around. You can just walk through. You can just open the door, or you can use the knocker. And that's all it takes to really suck somebody in. Of their live, they are interacting, their decisions matter fundamentally. And I think that's a really interesting thing that's all it took to get somebody hooked.
Yeah. Yeah, that is, it's funny because, of course, when you shared this with me, I immediately thought of a very similar thing, another case of someone trying to explain D&D by example that's gone around the internet quite a bit recently, which is Deborah Ann Wall doing an interview with, John Bernthal. Am I getting
Jeremy,
his name right?
There you go. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. And literally they're in some other kind of interview. I don't remember the exact context, but he's like, I don't know what D&D is. And she says, well, let's play. And they just immediately starts to play the game. I have a little clip of it. You want to watch some of it together, Dan?
Yeah, this keeps getting pitched to me on YouTube, and I have actually avoided this until today.
Three, that's a 10. So no, you've never met an owlbear in your life. You have no idea whether it's threatening.
Oh shoot,
or
it
not,
started right in the middle. I apologize. Hang on a second. Yeah. Bear with me. The here we go. Sorry.
Well, Paul does this. I'll give it a
Jesus.
Is that, I'm struggling you have to start there?
With the deck today. So sorry.
I don't know where it comes to dress. Like, I don't, it's like a game, but like you imagine you're like in the game. Right?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, it's just a collaborative storytelling with some characters.
And you tell the story?
Yeah, I'm a dungeon master. So generally, I've written an arc and created a world, and then players explore it. And I make calls as to like how difficult it is to climb a wall or fight a monster or that kind of thing.
And so if you say this is a real difficult monster to fight, then you've got to come up with a different way of fighting it?
Yeah, or it can just be like how hard you hit it and how long the thing goes, but it might be how do you negotiate your way out of it. If you can't actually kill a dragon, but it's going to eat you, how do you tell it not to? So there are other kind of checks that you can do, persuasions and deceptions and intimidations. And all
and then
things.
You decide whether you beat the dragon, the person whether it's, beat the dragon.
Yeah, there are stats. There's a lot of math involved that can make that happen. But like,
God damn.
You want to play D&D?
I mean, I'll try. I mean, what do you think
no,
I'd
like,
be able to do?
Literally right now.
Sure.
All right.
This is the magic,
so
right?
You,
like, let me explain.
You've got a bow strapped to your back.
How to play by just playing.
And a dagger at your hilt, right? So you're walking through the woods. It's dark. It's at night. Almost no moonlight is coming through. You hear a crack off in the distance. Something large stepped on a branch. What would you do?
First thing? How far away is the crack?
Give me a perception check. So then you roll dice and we'd see how perceptive you are. Let's say you roll.
So there's just a little taste of it, right? But I think that's clearly she's just making up a scene on the spot, right? You're in the woods, you're walking, you hear a noise, right? Eventually she introduces a monster. Oh, it's a monster, right? It's an owlbear. They start talking about that. I think that the setting is fascinating, right? Because they're doing an interview. They're in chairs with microphones. There's clear. Yeah. There's no paper, there's no pencils, there's no dice, right? This is the magic situation of, okay, they have no access to materials. Can they play D&D? And they start to play some D&D.
Yeah, yeah. And, huge props to John there, because he's totally instantly into it and committed. And I think I've avoided that interview because I was worried that wouldn't be the case. And I'm just completely enchanted by how, or sarcastic about it or something like that. And I'm completely enchanted by him being entirely present, entirely engaged for it instantly. And that's all it takes to someone who's at least a little bit receptive to it. Like, that's where the game started from. And that's really all it takes to really grab somebody into the situation.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I feel like a lot of folks missed the bus on this, because in the early days when somebody was when I know a lot of stories of people who were like curious about D&D, tried to get introduced to it, and then were just immediately confronted with like, well, okay, here are lots of rules, right? Here's all the math. Let's roll a bunch of dice. Let's write down a bunch of numbers, and the failing to get to that core moment of like, no, ultimately this is just a little bit of make-believe, right? We're just gonna play pretend. You pretend to be in this this person. I will tell you what the situation is, and we'll just talk back and forth. And I think like more people need to be introduced to RPGs in that way, right?
The hook is the decision. The hook, right, is when the player got to make a decision that mattered in the situation. That, I mean, that is why we call it role playing, of put yourself in the situation, make it. And as soon as Tom Snyder had a door to interact with, and as soon as John Bernthal had a decision about how to interact with something maybe dangerous towards them, that's where they get hooked. And the sooner you can get the new player to that moment, the better.
Yeah, I wonder how long you could keep that going. Again, if you're in that setting where you're just having to improvise, right? You have no materials on hand, right? How long, you know, if they had been given infinite time, which obviously they weren't, they were doing an interview and they're trying to, no, we gotta move this conversation back to reality. But if they were just gonna sit there and just like, no, we're just gonna keep playing until we're tired of it, how long could Deborah and Will go there of inventing stuff? And I bet the answer is quite long. Frankly, I bet, you know, as long as the other person is also into it and excited and engaged,
I agree.
Keep that going for a while.
I agree. My, you know, when I was improvising my exercise, I was aiming for three beats. I was, aiming for a structure of ABC sort of beats. And then maybe you can check in, and that was working pretty well for me for what it's worth. And then you can check in and say, do you want a different situation with the same characters? Do you want to proceed to a different location, or do you want to take a break at this point? And depending on your audience, the answer may or may not be yes at that point. So I was like, you can do pretty good. You can do a pretty good illusion with kind of a three beat structure, frankly, in my experience.
Yeah. Dan, we're just about out of time here. Any final thoughts on playing D&D with no materials whatsoever?
I think you can get it pretty close to zero. As we just saw, you can, it's just giving a situation and a decision to players is going to hook them in. I absolutely agree with you, Paul, that if it, with a randomization element, then you've got a role-playing game. If you can't find any way of making that happen whatsoever, then it kind of collapses to just fantasy improv, which is a good thing into itself. But I would find any way, flip a coin, rock, paper, Rochambeau. And if the mechanics collapse, just binary yes or no, okay, that's still a role-playing game. As you said, somewhat improv is when it's all yeses. And role-playing is when sometimes the dice oracle tells you no. How do you deal with that issue? So if you can just get some kind of randomization element in there, you can do a pretty bang up job, particularly for those of us that have some kind of expertise with D&D. You know, Deborah there, pull out an owlbear. Well, you and me, that seems like old hat cliche. But to John there, what is this? I've never heard of such a thing. How big is it? What does it do? What's its behavior? What's its history? Right. So these things that to us seem like common tropes can seem so fresh and so amazing to a new player. You'll get a lot of mileage out of it.
Yeah, I think in the chat, William is hitting the priority list for me exactly. The first thing I want is writing material, pen and paper, right? But not because I don't think randomization is important. I absolutely do, but I think I can invent randomization with a pen and paper, and then also use that for other things. Note taking, I think, you know, recording is important just for the consistency of the story. But then number two, random generator, and then the last thing I'll throw, the big monkey wrench for me, is technology, right? You can do so much with the current technology that it almost, like, if you have a smartphone with internet access, everything else is out the window. I think you can do everything with that at this point, even to the point of, I'll just throw this out very randomly at the last 2 minutes here. I have a good friend who has been playing an ongoing Shadowrun game for a while now, with just himself and ChatGPT. And he has just taught the AI enough about the Shadowrun universe to run a very satisfying for him game of Shadowrun. And he just asks the AI, what happens? What happens? Right. And here are my actions. What happens?
Fascinating.
And it's fascinating.
Fascinating.
Yeah. Right.
I will say that even with all the phone access to things, and, you know, I'll briefly pitch here. If you are lacking, if you're trying to play an original D&D, basic D&D game, you know, we have now at OED Games, we have an entire full set of rules for free on the web. And you can go to oedgames.com, find the link to Expanded. And with some work from me and enormous work by our patron, William, we have an almost entirely complete set of basic D&D type rules you can just look up on the fly, because we want that to be available for people. So you can look for that. If you don't have an adventure, you're going to have to experiment with improv as a DM. You're going to have to improvise creating the adventure on the fly. And that's a great exercise. You should definitely do that sometime.
Yeah. And in fact, it's an exercise that you and I, Dan, do periodically on this very show. Let's look up some of our dungeon design dashes of the past. And you can see Dan and I improvise an adventure in about an hour. Not actually running it, but of course of recording it, right? Of creating and writing down that adventure. And those dungeon design dashes are also available on our either free to our patrons or on our drive-through RPG. And you can go find those on Wandering DM's drive-through RPG.
We put our money where our mouth is, Paul.
We do. We do indeed. viewers, if you have any thoughts on how to run a game with no materials whatsoever, or other interesting, I would just love to hear stories of like, what kind of crazy scenario did you find yourself in where you're trying to run a game and you for whatever reason don't have access to materials? Because I think that's kind of really interesting, this conversation, to figure out, okay, in this setting, how would I run an RPG? Please leave us your thoughts in the comments section of the YouTube video. We'd love to hear from you, and maybe that'll spin off a new conversation for us in the future.
Definitely. And of course, remember that you can like, follow, and subscribe to us. We're on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, GitHub, places like that. We do have the handle Wandering DMs on all the sites, so please look for us there and jam that like button.
If you prefer to listen to our show in audio-only podcast format, you can find those audio files on our website at wanderingdms.com. You can also find us on all the various podcast carriers, such as iTunes and Spotify and Pocket Cast, places like that. If you're listening to this show right now on one of those sites and it offers the ability to do so, please rate and review our show. That helps other users of that site find us, and we really appreciate it.
You know, gonna thank the viewers today for some great chat. Thanks so much for watching, because it makes it so much more fun for us, and you're injecting little bits of chaos that we need for the show every week. So thank you for watching. And of course, huge thanks to our patrons who support the show. If you'd like to join them, please visit patreon.com/wanderingdms. And like Paul said at the top of the hour, every single one of our tiers gets you access to our private Discord server, where the conversation continues round the clock all week long. And we'll be there in about 10 minutes for our live video after chat, because we want to hear from our patrons their experiences of not having materials and how they got there and what they did in response. Because I think there's a lot of things we can still learn about that. We're both there today, right, Paul?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I was just going to jump in here and make sure that you remember, as you're discussing our upcoming appearances, don't forget our live Dungeon Design Dash coming up very soon in April.
Right. That's, of course, at Rising Phoenix Game Convention that we're looking forward to going to. And then we're going to do it. And then the day or two after it, Paul, we're going to run the new adventure live that we had to make events for that we don't know what we're running. Actually are going to, over the weekend, we're going to make it and we're going to run it multiple times. So if you are coming to RPGCon, we would love you to join in any one of those sessions. Thanks for the reminder, Paul.
April 25th to April 27th in Medford, Mass. Am I getting that right? No. Somewhere else. It's in Massachusetts.
Milford? Milford? Medford? Milford, there you go.
Those,
very good.
One of those million M ones. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So put a link in the chat to Rising Phoenix Game Con, April 25th to April 27th here in Massachusetts. Come check it out. Come see us live.
And help us improvise our adventure. Because we need that audience help, right?
We do. We really do. The audience is our dice.
So don't forget, we are live. Bring dice, because we might not have ours. So we are live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. So please, we hope you'll join us again next week for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you.